Welcome into Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting from our First South Forum Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.1 and 133 on LUS. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. And I say that because we're going to have two full hours where we can take your phone calls today. I know we had a lot of guests yesterday and the day before, and it was good and bad. I mean, it's always good to have guests, but it's sometimes, you know, it seemed like a lot of people wanted to get in yesterday, and we couldn't quite get to all of them. And again, that's why we do it almost every day. So there, hopefully those of you who wanted to get in yesterday, many of those subjects are still kind of ongoing. So we've got lots of opinions on different things and subjects to discuss. I intentionally, I guess you could say, for self-preservation, haven't talked much NFL this week for obvious reasons, although we did talk a lot of Saints, here and there. Certainly feel free if you have any thoughts on the NFC Championship game, the AFC Championship game. I'm not as bitter as I have been the last few years, just because it was just different. We talked about it a little yesterday and or the day before. I don't feel like the Saints were cheated down the stretch. A lot of the mystery, I think, has been kind of cleared up. You don't have to like it, and we can talk about that. You know, it's a fascinating subject to me, the fine line between loyalty, selfishness, team first. I mean, it's all very interesting. What's best? Certain guy, you know, I preach all the time that I am not a player guy. I'm a team guy, and yet I understand there are certain players that some people feel like deserve maybe a little more treatment than others. I'll listen to that. I mean, I get it. I don't have to like it, but I can get it. And so I think that's a fascinating subject. I'm sure there are a lot of people, I talked to a few, who are Saints fans who read what Drew Brees' wife said, were more angry after than before. Where for me, it's about understanding and somehow accepting what's going on or what happened. And it kind of cleared up a few more things. Like, it answered, I don't know, at least maybe, I'm just throwing out an arbitrary number, maybe 65% of the times of the answers when I said, how can we be this bad? Like, maybe now that answers, like, what, how they could be that bad. There's so many things. It's just an illustration of all the things that we really don't know that goes on behind the scenes and impacts the result on a basketball court or a baseball field or a football field. I mean, there's so many things behind the scenes that we probably don't know and will never know. And that impact decisions that coaches make and performance of teams and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, so if you want to talk about the Brees situation or the Saints situation or, moving forward, any of that is always on, you know, the Saints are always on the table. But I did get a shot in the arm yesterday. It was nice. Like, it's been a lot of depressing stuff with the Saints losing and kind of fizzling. But got a shot in the arm yesterday. You know, we've been talking about just here and there and hearing rumors, and I had resolved in my mind even before the season was over last year that George Springer more than likely was not coming back. But the thought process, and yesterday that became official. No, the day before. He signed like the richest contract in the history of the Blue Jays. I mean, good luck. I got nothing but good things to say about George Springer. He was exciting. It was from day one. I remember seeing when the Astros drafted him and seeing him in the minor leagues hit these long home runs to center field. And you know, think about all of the minor leaguers, think about all the young, you draft someone and they're highly thought of. How many of them become bust? Total bust. Or how many of them maybe achieve a little bit but still kind of leave you disappointed? Springer was a bundle of energy. Springer was just fun to pull for. You loved the way he played. I wish he could have been a better base stealer because he was never a great base stealer, but he was a great base runner. He was a way above average defensive player. He hit for power. He just did so much. He was just a great guy to be kind of like a face of a franchise. He and Altuve, but he was just great. And the other thing that I always respected about him is when it was obvious early on that he had a stuttering problem, and then you find out that he had a really bad stuttering problem when he was a kid. It's just like, and then you'll watch him go through that and how he always handled himself and how he never ran from interviews, and he got to where he was pretty good at them. And you could tell that he had to put in a lot of work to get to that point. It's kind of like people who come from other countries in baseball, it's mostly Hispanic players. Like some people make fun of them when they struggle with doing interviews in English, and I just would never do that. Like, I can't even imagine trying to do that. Like, I had to take in college 4 semesters of Spanish, and it was torture. Like, I had to get tutored. I mean, it was awful. I was terrible at it. And, I just hated it. And I couldn't even imagine going on, to another country and having to do an interview speaking their language that I had never, in 4 semesters, I learned how to roll my tongue a little bit, and that's about it. I mean, I know a few words here and there, but I don't. There's no way I could speak their language. There's just no way. And so I've always, it always amazed me how these guys can come over. And it's not like all these guys grew up in fancy, rich, where they can have all these opportunities to be educated about foreign languages and all. I mean, just not everybody has that. And a lot of these guys, I mean, I don't know how they do. They come over here, a new country, and they got to come in front of a camera, if it's a huge hit in a big game in front of the whole country, and try to speak someone else's language that you didn't grow up. I mean, I don't even know how they do it. So it amazed me. But same thing with George. So I've always respected the way George handles that. But anyway, so George is officially with the Blue Jays, and all the conversation was that his buddy, Brantley, was going as well. And it was even reported yesterday in the morning and in early afternoon that he had signed with the Blue Jays, a 3-year deal. Well, by the afternoon, I go into a meeting and I come out and everything had changed. All of a sudden, Michael Brantley signed a 2-year, $32 million extension with the Astros. I was like, whoa, this is a breath of fresh air. What a breath of fresh air. So I understand that it's, big football weekend. Going to just find out this weekend who's going to Super Bowl. And we'll, again, if you want to talk about any of those matchups, we certainly can do that, and we will. If we don't get to it today, we'll certainly do it tomorrow. Make predictions and why and all that stuff. But wow. for me anyway, it was a shot in the arm. You know, so much around the Astros has been so negative. And a lot of people, you know, were trying to spin the old, you know, it was the end of an era and a big transition period, and they're going to lose this person and that person. Yeah, they lost Springer, but they didn't lose that many people. By the way, Chris Devinsky signed with the Diamondbacks. Boy, is that a good thing. You know, some people you want to lose. Some people you don't want to ever see pitch for your team again. Or play for your team again. Chris Devinsky was one of Paul. I did not. Look, I appreciated the one or two years where he was really good and really effective, but I did not. I mean, I grew to not like any time that guy was coming into the game. I mean, I'm not a big, oh, look at him, how, you know, he does all, you know, I don't really care about touchdown dances and bat flips and all that. None of that. But that guy was the cocky, he was the cockiest on the field. He had like the cockiest walk of all time, I think, in the history of cocky walks in baseball. He had to have the cockiest of all time, and you can get away with that if you're doing great. But when you stink and you have a cocky walk, I just can't. It was hard to watch. It's hard to watch it. So I'm so glad Chris Devinsky no longer pitches for the Astros. So glad. So some attrition, like Billy Napier cleverly says sometime, some attrition is good attrition. That was good attrition. So we might, for those of you who are ready for baseball season, we're going to be talking some baseball today. The Cajuns announced their baseball schedule yesterday. Want to give a few thoughts on that and maybe look at just for fun. Also wanted the Astros situation now that they've got Brantley back. And I did want to have some comments about Don Sutton, who died a couple days ago, and we didn't really have room in yesterday's show to talk about that. So be some baseball today on the show. But again, if you would like to call in, 706-0111, comment on the Saints, NFC Championship game, AFC Championship game, all of that is certainly fair play. We'll begin doing all that next, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Acadiana Sports Station phone number 706-0111. 706-0111. If you would like to get in, probably many of you are not quite ready to talk baseball, but some of you probably can't wait. I mean, you know, unless you were a fan of one of the teams that is still going on. And it's still playing, then, you know, you're probably ready to put football on the back burner a little bit. We did talk basketball yesterday. Coach Murphy was in, and we talked to him like we do each week, talking about Cajun basketball. Oh, speaking of basketball, I know LSU had the crazy huge loss. And what came to mind to me, and I meant to look it up yesterday afternoon, and I did not. You know, what did Alabama make? 23 three-pointers, which is just insane. But, you know, and those kind of games are going to happen here and there. But it reminded me of a game that was played. Again, I meant to look it up. I want to say late 80s, early 90s. And LSU was playing Auburn. It seemed like it was late in the season. And anytime I'm at a blowout, I repeat this line. I can remember Joe Dean doing the game and him saying, you know, Sonny Smith was coaching at Auburn. I'm trying to remember. It seemed like there was a guard who was number 12 for Auburn. And I can't think of the guy's name. But anyway, when you get old, you get senile, and that kind of stuff happens. But They hit a jump shot or scored a bucket, and I can remember Joe Dean saying, and the Tigers are down by an even 40. And they didn't even lose by 40 to Alabama the other night. But in that game, they lost by like 40-some points, or at least I think they lost by 40-some points. It was at Auburn, and this was a pretty good LSU team at the time. And they – so, you know, that happens every once in a while, but – Anytime a team is down by 40 in a basketball game, I think about that line from Jodine. And the Tigers are down by an even 40. But, you know, those kind of games are going to happen here. And they don't happen often. It was pretty historic. I get that. But remember, it kind of reminded me of that game. The you know, it's still kind of early. You know, we'll talk more NBA as we get on, and I'll try to help or provide therapy where I can to Lewis until the Pelicans get on any kind of a roll or start to show more positive signs. So we'll do that. But in the meantime, we will continue to look back on football, try to figure it out, as well as, you know, I'll give my picks tomorrow on who I think is going to win. Who I want to win and who I think is going to win, you know, may not be the same on either one of them. But a lot of times, especially this time of the year, I pick with my heart anyway. So it's easier. It's easier to pick with your heart sometimes than to try to pick with your mind and ignore your heart. But anyway, and I don't know if heart's the right word when you're dealing with Stalin-Hitler situations. But, again, we're almost in February. It's amazing. We're starting to sniff it already. And it is going to, you know, college baseball starts in February. College softball starts in February. Spring training Major League Baseball starts in February. So it's not – baseball's not as far away as you might think. And – in the major leagues, there are, you know, some big things, some big pieces that haven't been signed yet. Now, one of them is Trevor Bauer, reigning Cy Young. And a lot of people are thinking that Trevor Bauer is going to sign with the Angels. Let's hope that doesn't happen. From an Astros standpoint, anyway. Like, he's really good, and he's really controversial, and he's really, you know, something always seems to be happening. He has this distaste for the Astros, and that's fine. And you know, they kind of could go, I mean, it could get really volatile. If he comes into the Astros division and goes to the Angels, like a lot of people are thinking. Like, some people think he's going to go to the Mets just because the Mets have all this money. And that's fine. Keep him in the National League. One, he's really good. And two, he's, you know, trouble. But a lot of people think he's coming to Angels, which would not be good from an Astro perspective. You know, you want to keep as much talent out of your division and or out of the league as possible. And the Angels, while they have good hitters here and there, they typically never have any pitching. So I say let's just keep it that way. Now, with the Astros signing Brantley, they now have to fill one outfield spot instead of two outfield spots. Just for those of you who have not kept up, Josh Reddick he hasn't signed anywhere, but he's not coming back to the Astros. And the hot rumor for weeks now, probably more than weeks, I'd say over a month now, is that Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to sign with the Astros. Well, it hasn't happened yet. Like, since the end of the season, everybody was saying Brantley's gone, and now he's not gone. So, you know, it's probably still a decent chance that Jackie Bradley Jr. is going to sign with the Astros. But that doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like, why, you know, it's not like Jackie Bradley Jr. is about to get some $150 million contract here. What's taking so long? Like, let's sign. I mean, he's not Trevor Bauer or even Marcell Ozuna, who also has not signed yet. Like, I don't know what is taking so long, but it's, you know, I'd like to, if it's going to happen, let's go. Now, the value of a Jackie Bradley is that he is a elite defensive center fielder. Like, you could make the argument that he's the best defensive center fielder in baseball. At least he's in the top, you know, He's on that conversation. So the Astros at times last year, depending on who was playing in the outfield, could argue they had the best defensive outfield in baseball. And in the year before, when they still had Mariznick, you know, depending on who was on the field at the time, they could certainly argue that. Now, they're not going to have that. You know, Tucker's okay. He's not bad, but he's an average outfielder. He's not as good as Reddick as an outfielder. Brantley's okay. Not good. So you now have two average corner outfielders. Now that there's no Reddick and no Springer. And so it's going to be really important to have an elite center fielder. Now, Jackie Bradley is going to, he's 30 years old now. He's not a young player anymore. And that, my thing with signing Springer to a 5 or 6 year deal, typically center fielders, when they get in their 30s, their production goes down. And so we'll see how, I mean, I'm sure Springer will do fine this year and next year. After that, we'll start to see. I would be shocked if 5 years from now, Springer is still at the level that he is right now. And if he is, it will be kind of an unusual thing. He will be kind of bucking the odds there because he's played a lot of baseball. He's not a young 31. You know, he's played a lot of postseason, deep postseason runs. He's played a lot of games. He's not like we're saying Batman is or people like that who, yeah, they're in their 30s, but they ain't really played that much football. So he's not like that. So we'll see how that plays. So hopefully the Astros can get Jackie Bradley Jr. or someone like that. If not, I don't know who they're going to get. Like you want to be good defensively. And so, yeah, they can get a guy who can hit more home runs, like a Randall Grichuk or someone like that. But who's going to play center field? Miles Straw is not good. Now, I mean, I don't mind having him as like a little base running guy, but he's not good. He can't hit. So Miles Straw cannot be the answer. It's very important. And Jackie Bradley's just an average offensive player. There's nothing special about him offensively. But when you have two mediocre defensive corner outfielders, you need a great defensive. It's very important they sign Jackie Bradley. It's not that I have to have him, but I got to have his skill set. And I don't know anybody else that has his skill set. I mean, you probably could go find a great defensive outfielder who's going to hit, you know, 210. But, it'd be nice to have a great defensive outfielder that at least is decent offensive. He could give you something, maybe. But if the Astros can get Jackie Bradley Jr. to play center field, well, then, you know, this transition period may not be as bad as everyone is saying. I mean, they still got Yuli at first, Altuve at second, Correa at short, Bregman at third. We heard the news this morning they signed Castro. Now, look, Castro's not a great player, but he's okay as a platoon catcher. And you got Candy. So you got, you know, Candy and Castro are both good defensively. They both have strong arms. Castro doesn't block the ball as well as Candy does most of the time. But still, you got two guys that won't hurt you defensively, and they're not plus offensive catchers, but they're okay. I mean, they're not just total All-American outs either. So, you know, you like that. They've not gotten a closer, if you haven't kept up with it. But what they have is a lot of arms in the bullpen. Now, all these guys are not going to pitch well. Doesn't work that way in the bullpen every year. Some guys have good years, some guys don't. But what they have is potentially numbers in the pen. They signed Pedro Baez from the Dodgers, who's not great, but he's good. You know, Presley's not great, but he's okay. He's good. They also remember Joe Smith opted out last year. They didn't have him last year. Theoretically, he'll be back. They also remember they signed Jeremy Pruitt, who was going to help in the bullpen from the Rays last year. He was hurt all year and didn't play. And while all those guys were out, young pitchers like Anoli Paredes, And Taylor and Scrub had to pitch a lot of big innings and got a lot of valuable experience. So, and then they acquired Rayleigh, who did very well. Abreu still has a good arm. Most of us hate seeing Josh James in there, but he still throws in the upper 90s. So that's a lot of arms in the pen. They signed Ryan Stanek. And so I don't know that they have a quote-unquote closer, but it would not surprise me if they go bullpen by committee, closer by committee. And so, and then, you know, they've got enough arms as starting as long as they're healthy. Pretty exciting. Got a, you know, just a jolt of adrenaline. I did anyway, after the disappointing, bitterly disappointing Saints into the Saints season. The signing of Brantley kind of got me a little hop in my step there. Kind of liked it. Maybe the Astros window that everybody loves to talk about is not as closed as people think. All right. If you have any thoughts on that or any of the other subjects, certainly feel free to call 706-0111 on the other side. We'll talk, get back to some football next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studios. Simulcast on Stadium 32.1 and 133 on LUS. Want to remind you, go to 103.7thegame.com. Put yourself in position to win a $100 gift card from Rufino's on the River. It's free to join, so why not do it? All you got to do is go to the website, sign up for the clubhouse, and you could win a $100 gift card to Rufino's on the River at 1037thegame.com. All right, I said I would do a little football mix in because we're going to be talking more baseball in the next hour. I want to discuss the passing of Don Sutton. We normally really, you know, Hall of Fame level players, we don't talk about a lot, but when they die, we typically try to discuss them and put their career in some sort of historical perspective. And so I want to do that a little bit next hour. Plus, I want to get to the Cajun baseball schedule, which was released yesterday afternoon, really late, but we won't go down that road very far. But we do want to discuss it. And there's several interesting aspects to it and just some general overall impressions. But it is still technically football season. And so there's still, you know, whether, okay, what are the Saints going to do next? What is LSU going to do next? And anything going on in the NFC and AFC championship games? First of all, we haven't talked about this on this show at all. But does anybody really think from Sunday to now that there's any chance that Patrick Mahomes is not going to play in the AFC championship? Like, really, they keep talking about it, and it's like this big story. And maybe I'm being very naive here, but I just, from the very moment that he walked off the field, or actually ran off the field, I never thought there was any chance that he wasn't going to play. So I haven't even thought about it, really. Now, people keep talking about it, and they're doing all these, you know, on some of the national shows, they're having all of these, concussion conversations, and I get it. I'm not saying, you know, concussions are very serious. Believe me, I know. I mean, if you know my personal story, I understand how devastating a concussion can be. But I just, in my mind, there's just zero chance. Now, doesn't mean I know everything for sure about what's going on with the health of Patrick Mahomes, but I just don't believe there's any chance he's not going to play. Now, does that mean he's going to be as good as he always is? You know, we'll see. That's why, as they say, that's why they play the game. Let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Foot, this is the guy from South Lafourche.
Yes, sir.
Well, I got a question, a comment, and a history lesson for you.
Okay.
I've been at work for a couple of weeks, so I ain't talked to you in a while, so here we go. First of all, the last time I talked to you, we talked about the process the NFL was using for the playoffs this year. So was that right? They were using the seeding process? Did you look into that?
No, it was not correct. It was like it always was, and they played it off like it was new, but it wasn't new. The highest remaining seed played the lowest remaining seed like it's been for years. So there was nothing new about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay. Well, my comment is this: of the four remaining teams, I cannot pull for a team led by Tom Brady. I'm sorry, I can't.
I understand.
On the So on the NFC side, you know, I'd like to see the Packers win. But overall, I want to see one of the AFC teams win. Because at the beginning of the season, I called you and told you that after rewatching Super Bowl 54, I thought that this Chiefs team was good enough to be the first to win three in a row. And on the other side, Buffalo, those poor people have taken such a beating 30 years ago, they need something. So I'd be fine with Buffalo winning it all. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I mean, it's not even close. I mean, I would love for Buffalo to win. I mean, and you know, whoever would be second would be so far distant. I mean, look, you have two nauseating options. One option that annoys me, and one that I would be very happy if Buffalo won. No question. So yeah, in terms of my heart, there's no question. Now, I think they have the third best chance of winning it of the four teams. And so I don't really think it's going to happen. But, you know, you never know. On paper, how are they going to do it? I can't give you a good football reason other than they're still playing and they have, you know, they seem to have some magic in them this year. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, people offshore can be vicious, man. And I was ready for a beating on Monday morning. So you know what I did? When I went to breakfast, I put on my Saints hat. I sat loud and proud, and I wore my Saints hat and said, looking ahead to next year.
Good for you.
Now, here's your history lesson. A few minutes ago, you were talking about George Springer's stuttering problem and how bad that must have been for him. Do you remember... Okay, Super Bowl 15, the Raiders and the Eagles. After that game, they interviewed Lester Hayes, who had a severe stuttering problem. Do you remember that at all?
I don't know. I certainly remember the game because I nailed the final score 27-10 in my prediction. But I don't remember that specific interview, no, sir.
Yeah, they interviewed Lester Hayes, who had a horrible stuttering problem. And
yes.
The reporter who was interviewing him was just trying to get through it, and the only thing I understood in that interview was Harold Carmichael. That's all I understood.
Well,
so
he used the word stupendous a lot. I remember that. It seemed like he would use the word stupendous, but no. Lester Hayes was he was quite a character for sure.
Yeah, but anyway, I just thought that stirred that memory when you talked about
exactly
his stuttering problem. So. All right. Well, we'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks for the call. One other, before I get to the next call, one other just thought. And again, I'm no expert here. I'm not saying anybody should do or should not do this. But I understand there's a lot of LSU fans very frustrated right now because of the defensive coordinator situation. I'm wondering, because a lot of the, on the surface anyway, best options from the collegiate level seem to be gone, or at least not necessarily options that you would want necessarily. I'm wondering if the NFL, now I understand that, you know, they tried the NFL deal and the Saints blocked it, but I'm wondering if, I mean, I would think most of O's ties are in college, obviously, but I'm wondering if the NFL is the best option now. I mean, I have no idea who that would be. But, like, I mean, you see headlines like Mike Singletary is applying for the defense, interviewing for the defensive coordinator job for the Bears. You got to be kidding me. Like, they're not going to really do that, are they? Really. But I don't know who it would be, but I'm wondering if the NFL is the best option now left for LSU because of how, you know, the thing is they've got to be very frustrated, obviously, and I know some fans are probably very worried with good reason, and it seemed like the NFL is the next best option. Now, that doesn't always work out. Like, you know, you don't want to hire the defensive version of Scott Linehan, but I don't know. It just seemed like that's probably the next best option for them. We'll see how that plays out. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Cameron, you know, I never thought about it really mostly all football season, but right now, man, it could be a surprise champion with this COVID thing, you know. I keep forgetting about that. It's strange how you kind of been going through the football season and stuff, but we kind of forget that they don't have fans sometimes, you know. We very, you know, got our eyes on the game and stuff, and we're thinking about this and that, but it might be a strange champion, man. Buffalo might win it. They can win.
Oh, look, it would be tremendous if they won it. Yeah,
like I told you, I don't really think none of the number one seeds are going to win. And like I said, I'm thinking about this COVID thing, and I'm like, man, look what's right there in the front. I just hope these people, I just hope Tampa Bay just don't get to the Super Bowl again.
I think they're going to get beat, you know, 20-something points.
I sure hope so, man. I sure, about 20-something points?
Yes.
Man turns to elitist quick. Man.
Well, no, it has nothing to do with being an elitist. I mean, I think this, if the turnovers were even, I think the Saints would have beat them 17-14, 17.
I just hope that don't happen, man. And like I said, right now with this COVID and stuff, man, I don't know. It's been a strange season, though. I wonder what's going to come going forward, you know, like next season and stuff, how I can look at fans and everything.
It's been strange because of all the COVID issues, but really, I mean, did it? What was the biggest kind of really off the wall thing that happened in terms of success of certain teams or not? I mean, nothing really off the wall happened.
Nothing really. I mean, you know, I mean, it might affect more NBA teams like basketball, like more maybe. I guess you see in basketball right now, it's already hitting like the Wizards. Hall Wizards didn't play like in they didn't play like 6 games or something like that over a week, you know, and stuff. So man, they might shut them down, you know, and stuff. So I don't know, man. It's been a strange thing. I just hope this stuff get back to normal. Like I told you, like we were talking about it, and you laughing and joking about it. Like I told you, I don't think things can ever get back to normal, man. We got lucky to get sports again. I didn't think sports would ever come back. We got lucky. Okay?
Look, as crazy as this year's been, we crowned champions in all these sports. So it's been rough. Yeah, but we crowned champions. It's going to get back to normal. It won't take that long.
You think
so? Come on now. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not that abnormal now. We play. We crowned a World Series champion. We played.
I'm not talking about that champion stuff, Kevin. I'm talking about it in life, in the COVID situation. I ain't talking about no champion. I don't care less about that.
We're going to get back. It's going to get back. Like it's not going to be this way forever. No, I don't believe that. It's not going to be this way forever. Hang in there.
All right. Bye.
All right. Man. It's not no San Antonio Saints. Y'all can. It's all the bad stuff's not going to happen. It's okay. Take a commercial break. We'll be back. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot. 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you if you did make a New Year's resolution and you've already broken it before February even gets here, don't feel bad. We go to 1037thegame.com, take part in our failed resolution sweepstakes, and you could win a $500 Visa gift card. But again, it's free to join. It's free to sign up. Just go to the website, join the clubhouse, and put your name in the pot to win a $500 Visa gift card by going to 1037thegame.com. So that would, you know, if you're a Saints fan and you're upset, or you're the fan of some other team that's just gotten beat, and or, you know, it's kind of funny to me when I hear fans of teams who didn't even make the playoffs trying to ridicule fans whose team lost in the playoffs. I mean, think about that for a second. I guess that is like a first or second cousin to that mentality of, you know, I'd rather not make the playoffs than make the playoffs and lose, or I'd rather go to the Super Bowl and I'd rather not go to the Super Bowl than go to the Super Bowl and lose. I would never. I mean, you want to talk about glass half full thinking. That's really, in my opinion, that's really glass half full thinking. But that's really negative thinking. But no, it's just curious to me. I see it, you know, hear it on the air, hear it off the air, just talk, people talking, and their team didn't even make the playoffs. And yet they're making fun of people whose team made the playoffs and lost. Just curious. By the way, my daughter, Riley, who we talk about here and there, was very angry with me yesterday because she said I called her out on the air with the George Springer stuff. I did not call her out on the air, in my opinion. But, you know, I just been preaching for a while. Cause, I mean, I've thought that way my whole life. And, you know, for some people, it's probably why I've never had a Drew Brees jersey and never will. Just because, to me, as much as I appreciate everything Drew Brees did for the Saints, so, and I'm not saying everyone who has a Drew Brees jersey feels this way because that would be inaccurate, but he just kind of represents the I only pull for the team when they're good thing mentality. And I just could never wear a Drew Brees jersey. Never. As much as I appreciate what he's done. And now that Drew Brees is gone, it kind of illustrates that fact. It's like, okay, the franchise isn't over. Doesn't mean the Saints are never going to win another game again. It's still happening. You know, the franchise is still there. In fact, there are a lot of people who have the opinion now that if he would have just said, I'm injured and I can't play, the Saints might still be playing. Not only do they still have a franchise now that Drew Brees is no longer there, at the end, when he was apparently more injured than we even knew, and we thought he was really injured, there are a lot of people who are saying if you would have just not played, Saints might still be playing. That's why you just, that doesn't mean I'm not going to cry when he gives his Hall of Fame speech. Just means it's not all about any individual. Not all about any individual. But if you listen, you know, obviously it is, because that's the way the American sports media tells us. All right, commercial break. We'll come back, get to a little more baseball in this next hour, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game, broadcasting from our First South Farm Credit Studio, simulcast on Stadium 32.1 and LUS 133. Want to remind you, in case you are interested in doing it and you just haven't done it yet, it will cost you only $20 to purchase a raffle ticket to potentially win a 2021 Ford Bronco. The raffle is to benefit nonprofit Catholic Radio. The drawing will be on May the 15th. You can purchase a ticket by going to broncoraffle.com or at Hub City Ford or right here at the Delta Media Studio. So purchase your raffle ticket today to win a 2021 Ford Bronco presented by Hub City Ford. All right. I said a couple days ago Don Sutton died, and Don Sutton was just he was an interesting guy in that he had a lot of success, but he was one of these guys that didn't always say or do what everyone wanted him to say or do. He was very unpopular with a lot of Dodger fans at the end of his career because he got in this big fight with, you know, Mr. Perfect poster child Dodger guy Steve Garvey, and then he became an announcer for a long time and did a pretty good job, I thought. I mean, but again, he was a guy, for whatever reason, and I'm falling into it as well. Like, when we talk about the greatest pitchers of the last, whatever, 50 years or, you know, even further, a lot of people talk about Nolan Ryan, Steve Carlton, and guys like Roger Clemens. And, you know, I was a big Pedro guy. But really, Randy Johnson, does anybody ever bring up Don Sutton? Now, I know, you know, he started in the 60s. He basically started when I was born, but he pitched into the 80s, and he is, you want to talk about throwback. I don't know the exact number, but this guy went over 20 years, like 22, 23 years without missing a start. Think about that. He went over 20 years. Now, you know, there was the strike season, so you didn't have as many starts in a couple strike years that he was involved in. But he would make 35 to 40 starts every year. Like, he never missed a start for over 20-something years. He won 324 games. Now, again, the wins is a little different now because of the way the game is played. But still, he won 324 games. I'm not saying he's better than every pitcher who's pitched in the last 20 years because they don't really have the opportunity to win. It's not really set up for people to win 320-something games anymore. But still, he still won them. He finished his career, and he played for 23 years. And he finished his career with a 3.26 ERA, which is not like the best ever, but it's good. It's really good. And because, like most pitchers, you know, his last 4 or 5 years, he wasn't quite the pitcher he was in the prime of his career. So his ERA goes up a little bit. Plus, he finished in the American League, which most guys' ERAs are a little higher in the American League than when they pitch. Not everyone, but most of them are than when they go in the National League. He's number 7 all-time in strikeouts. Like, the only guys that are above him are Nolan Ryan, Randy Johnson, Roger Clemens, Steve Carlton, Tom Seaver, Bert Blylevin. And Blylevin, to me, was, again, I'm a little harder on him than most people are. I think Don Sutton was better than Bert Blylevin. But again, he's got more career strikeouts than Walter Johnson and Pedro and Bob Gibson and all these other elite historic pitchers. Now, he threw a few more years than like a Bob Gibson did, but still got like 600 or 700 more strikeouts than him. So, for whatever, and, you know, it's not like Don Sutton was, I don't know, and I'm not even saying this in a negative way, like a real, the, you know, like T.O. people have certain opinions about, or Barry Bonds, a lot of people say he was a jerk and he hated the media. And I mean, Don Sutton had his moments where people didn't like him, but it wasn't like he was this pariah. I mean, I was around when he was in his prime in the 70s, but I was a kid in the 80s. I was in high school and college, and I certainly knew Don Sutton. He played for the Astros for a little while. A lot of people don't remember that. Don Sutton came to the Astros not for long. They traded him to the Brewers, and they got Kevin Bass, Mike Madden, and, you know, Kevin Bass was a big part of the Astros team for a while. So, and he pitched well for the Astros. I don't know what went into that decision to get rid of him. I just think Don Sutton's one of those curious guys. Is that he really is an all-time great, and yet even among Dodgers, for, you know, a lot of Dodger fans don't like Don Sutton as much as a lot of, you know, you would think that he would for as many years as he was really good for the Dodgers. He just, I guess he was just kind of a guy who did his own thing and thought his own way and didn't always do what everyone, you know, said for whatever reason. I mean, I don't know. But for some reason, most people don't put him up there with the Seavers and Carltons and Ryans and all these pitchers that you hear their name and they just, oh, Roger Clemens, no, you know, and it's like, oh, and Don Sutton. Well, for most people, he would, like the old Sesame Street, which one of these does not belong? But he does belong. I mean, he has 324 wins. He's the number seven strikeout pitcher of all time, and the cat didn't miss a start for 20-something years. I mean, he's, you know, I'm not saying he's in on the Mount Rushmore of all-time major league starting pitchers, but he's in that conversation of elite guys historically. I mean, he's probably, like, better than a guy like Bob Feller, who most people would think Bob Feller's better than him. Well, how? You know, I could buy the argument that Walter Johnson's the greatest pitcher of all time. Cat don't have as many wins and more strikeouts than Walter Johnson. Walter Johnson. So, I don't know. I just think it's curious because I've fallen into that too. I don't ever mention his name very often when people say, okay, who are the greatest pitchers of your lifetime? I don't know that I've ever mentioned Don Sutton. Why? Well, I don't know. Maybe because the media didn't love him, and this is what I criticize, and I criticize because I've fallen victim to it. Here's an example. Because the media doesn't say, oh, he's great. He was one of the greatest ever over and over and over again. Somehow, a lot of us just believe him. But again, it's hard to argue with his numbers. He wasn't the hardest thrower ever. Didn't have the best curveball ever. But, I mean, the cat won 324 games. He's number seven strikeout pitcher of all time. And he took the ball. We talk about the best ability is availability. It's just interesting to when to me when guys like him die, and you look back at your career. Well, wait a minute. Why did I have a false, maybe a little bit of a false? I never thought the guy was bad, but why did I have maybe a little bit of a false impression about him historically? I mean, he's almost never mentioned with the great pitchers of all time. And it's fair to say that he is. You know, most people think Bob Gibson's career was way better than Don Sutton's. Not true. I don't know that I can't say that's true. He's pretty good. Don Sutton is a better pitcher in my mind than John Smoltz was. When you look at his career, most people would not think that. And then some of that's recency bias, but it's just, I don't know. Interesting category, interesting discussion. You know, you might say he's the Philip Rivers of major league pitchers of my childhood. You know, some would argue. I don't. The Philip Rivers Hall of Fame discussion is an interesting one, and we'll get to that one day. I'm not anti-Philip Rivers, but I'm certainly not, because he threw all these yards, he's a Hall of Fame guy either. And so that's a very interesting discussion that we're not going to have now, but we'll have one day in once after the Super Bowl and all. The Philip Rivers discussion and the Big Ben discussion, and there's a lot of very interesting ways to look at that. And it kind of fits into the argument I had the day after the national championship game for football. Like, how many of the best pitcher quarterbacks of all time could really play in the same era? At some point, you have to draw a line, because then it just becomes too easy and there's too many. Like, again, If in the next year or two we get another one of these historically best team of all time, you can't have that many best team of all time in that short a period of time. Something's not right about what's the system. We're not interpreting something correctly here at all. That's the way I look at things. Red flag. But no, wanted to talk about Don Sutton. We had too many interviews yesterday, and I think it's fair to say he's an underrated all-time pitcher. and he would fit in that underrated stand where guys, you know, other guys might be overrated. I think a guy like Bert Blyleven, in my opinion, was overrated. Maybe a false impression. I think after looking at the facts and his career and where he fits and why he hasn't been publicized more, I don't know. But his personality, even if it was considered ornery or cantankerous or whatever, has nothing to do with how good of a pitcher he was. And so I think it's fair to say Don Sutton was an underrated all-time pitcher. All right. Take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to look at UL's baseball schedule. I know it's a lot of baseball today, but, I mean, it's stuff that's happening. It's topical. College baseball season starts next month. The schedule was finally released yesterday. A little later than some of us would want, but it's here and it's impressive, and I want to give my impressions to that next. 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foot on 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. On this Thursday, I know we're talking a little more baseball than we normally talk. But it's, you know, a lot of baseball stuff's happening. Schedules are being released in college baseball. All-time Hall of Fame guy died this week. And, you know, some Astro news came out with losing one of the best players that ever played for the franchise, one of the most popular players that ever played for the Astros, and arguably the most successful player that ever played for the Astros is leaving. And then got this surprise yesterday that even though it was reported by many that the Blue Jays had signed him to a 3-year contract, that Michael Brantley is actually staying. So that it just kind of says, wait a minute here. Maybe all the negativity wasn't totally accurate. There might be more better chance than people are thinking. So we'll see how all that plays out. Before we get to that Cajun baseball schedule that I talked about, which is very interesting to me, and there's some really unique aspects to it. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Kevin. Good morning. This is Jared. How you doing this morning?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. Before you jump into baseball, I don't want to hold you off, but you made a comment yesterday morning, and then you said something again this morning that sparked two ideas in my mind, and I didn't get a chance to get in yesterday.
That's good.
So I'm giving you a call this morning about it. I want to thank you sincerely for bringing back nightmares to an entire generation of people who attempted to tackle Jamaica Thortez for 3 years or 4 years when you said Cecilia thought it might have been over when they lost Jamaica Thortez and they came back the next year and won the state championship. So it's not over for the Saints because they're losing Drew Brees, you know?
Exactly.
I believe you made that comment, and it just
it's one of the examples. You know, there's certain things in sports that when situations come up or examples come up, I think back to certain things that stuck with me over the years, and I always think of that situation. And it's nothing against Jamaican. He was incredible, but it was just so ironic to me that it was the year after his great career finished that they actually won the state championship.
Oh, I know. And my point is that we had nightmares. I still have nightmares about trying to tackle this guy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
and then my senior year, he's gone, and we say, look, we finally got a chance to beat this team. We go up there, we lead 2-0 at halftime, and then the rest of the team came out of the locker room and beat the hell out of us. So, and then they went on to win the state championship. So, a little funny comparison that I thought. I think, you know, we're talking about Drew Brees. I want to know what your opinion is. Do you think that this could possibly be a kind of like a domino effect with Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, and Phillip Rivers? You know, they're all kind of hanging on thread. Drew Brees is obviously in the decision. Ben Roethlisberger looked like he had made his decision on the big after the game. Phillip Rivers, I don't know if if the Colts are going to go back to him. Do you think there's a possibility that one of them leads the other two to make a decision? And then depending on if Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl or loses it, could we see a multiple retirement of two or three of these elite just legendary quarterbacks?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, Rivers is done and Breeze is done. I don't really think guys say, okay, he retired, so I'm going to retire. I think they're all kind of their own separate cases, you know. And just because some guy like Brady is actually older than Breeze, but at the end, Breeze was healthy for a long time. But, you know, in the last 2 years, he's had all these injuries, and even though he's a little younger than Brady, Brady's healthier than him right now. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think every case is separate.
Yeah,
Brady is just – he's just healthier, and so.
Well, and I know that they're, you know, professionally, they're not going to make decisions based on other people. I just found it a coincidence that, you know, Ben Roethlisberger looked so much like he was just absolutely, totally empty after that loss.
It was his fault in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
Now, not all his fault, but because they should have created a system where so much was not just on him throwing the football. Their running game just dissipated as the season went on.
Yeah.
But also though, he was coming off a major injury, and from a physical standpoint, he actually survived it pretty well last year. Now, from an efficiency standpoint, he did.
I don't think he feels like they're surrounding him with enough to be successful, and not offensive weapons, but as far as an offensive line, because he had people hanging on him, you know, the last two or three games they played. I believe if Tom Brady, for some strange reason, if he goes on and wins a Super Bowl, we could see Tom, Drew, Phillip, and possibly Ben all go in the same year. And
I think Brady's going to be back next year.
I think he'll be back.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way he's going to retire. No.
Well, listen up. I sent you a Facebook request and a Facebook messenger to friend request. You got to check your inboxes. I've been watching it there.
I'm terrible at all that stuff, but I'll try to look. Yeah, I'm terrible at all
that. I'd like to be able to follow you.
Okay.
All right, man. No problem. Thanks for taking the call.
Thank you. Maybe Lewis can help me with that, or my wife or daughter. I'm just terrible at that stuff, but I'll try. No, I don't think. I mean, Brady should play better next year. I mean, we talked about that earlier in this season. That especially with Bruce Arians, that first year the quarterbacks typically throw a lot of picks, and in the first half of the season, Brady, you know, that's why we were calling him Thomas Winston. He was throwing some pick sixes and throwing way more interceptions than he normally would, and that's not that uncommon in the first year under Arians, or it's not always uncommon, you know, just in the first year of in a new system. It takes a while. So no, I bet you Brady is fired up about next season. I'd be shocked if he retired. I mean, theoretically, they're going to be better next year. And so I don't, you know, unless something really weird happens, I don't know that there's any reason for him to retire. Now, you know, they're going to lose certain guys. I mean, it's the NFL. It's professional sports in this era. So, not, you know, the team won't be identical next year, but. No, I don't see any reason why he should retire. I don't think he's gonna. Now, Ben, I don't think he's gonna retire, but you know, I was listening coming home late the other night to the national show, and a guy called, and he was like this big Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and I disagreed with him, but it was amazing to hear. We're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers here. We're not talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars or someone. And this guy's a lifelong Steeler fan, he said, I don't think we have any chance of being any good the next couple of years. You have no chance? Like, what? You have no chance? This guy doesn't mean he's correct, but it's just his opinion caught me off guard. Like, he said he's a lifelong Steeler fan, And he doesn't think there's any chance the Steelers are going to be good in the next couple years. I thought that amazed me. Like, why? Like, were they really, you know, you could say, well, the 11-0 was smoke and mirrors. Okay, I believe that. But this is the NFL. It's not like it's that. There's no way that the Pittsburgh Steelers are that far gone that if they don't make a few changes, that they can't be good next year. That amazes me. But I doubt Mike Tomlin thinks that. But if this guy turns out to be true, then, you know, maybe he should retire. But look, it's hard to pass protect when you throw on every down. Like, you have to run the football. Some. I can't believe the Steelers are going to be that bad. But anyway, appreciate that call. All right, the Cajun baseball schedule. It opens on the 19th with a 3-game series at Tulane. The thing about this schedule, let me just listen. Just listen and tell me, you know, they play Houston Baptist for a 3-game series at home in March, and they play North Alabama for a 3-game series in May. Now, not saying they're going to win all those games. I just don't know a whole lot about Houston Baptist and North Alabama. And on paper, those teams are not as good as the other teams on the schedule. So the perception might be, they should win those games. But the rest of their schedule, I mean, they play Tulane, then Louisiana Tech, then LSU, then Rice, then Louisiana Tech, and McNeese. Who you say, oh, McNeese? Well, McNeese can beat you in baseball. I mean, this is a baseball state. Almost any team in this state can beat you. Mississippi State, Southern Miss, TCU, Coastal Carolina. I mean, there's just like not a break in this schedule other than you could maybe argue Houston Baptist or North Alabama. And what that means is it's just you can lose any game, really. Like, you say that, and sometimes it's just kind of coach speak. But on a schedule like this, like, they could lose every – well, that's a win. I mean, there aren't any on this whole schedule. I'm not saying it's the greatest schedule of all time. It's just where they are in college baseball right now. Like, there's not a lot – there's no gimmies on this schedule other than maybe North Alabama, who I don't know anything about. But – wow. It's going to be challenging for sure. All right. Take a commercial break. Couple more comments that I thought were very interesting that I liked about the schedule. And for those of you who haven't heard, on February 24th, LSU is scheduled to come to T-Mobile Field at Russo Park. So we'll be in Lafayette to play on February 24th, 6 o'clock. We'll be back on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. Before we get back to it, I want to remind you, the NFC Championship game, the AFC Championship game, both on Sunday, pregame starting, it says kickoff here for 1:30, but I don't think, is that really correct? I thought the kickoff was 2 o'clock. Is the kickoff really 1:30? Anyway. The coverage starts at 1:30, and you can hear both of those games, starting with the NFC game, then the AFC game, right here on 103.7, The Game. So if you're traveling around, oh, what's going on with the score? Just flip it on 103.7, The Game, Acadiana Sports Station, and you can watch that game. You can keep track of that game if you're doing other things or if you are traveling or whatever. So want to keep that in mind. You can hear both of them right here, 103.7 The Game. I think, I said earlier, I expect Green Bay to win handily for a lot of reasons. But one of them is that I know it's the playoffs, but it's still the third straight road game. Not very many teams do very well historically in football in the third straight road game. And again, I just if the Saints don't just give them the game, I think they win by double figures. But you know, none of that matters once they get on the field. So we'll see what happens. And I mean, that's all they talked about all week is about Patrick Mahomes, and I get it. But I mean, I mean, that would be the most shocking thing ever if he didn't play. I don't even think there's even a chance that he won't play. So we'll see how that plays out. No, a couple of things about this UL schedule is kind of a something that has happened, a concept that they're using in making this schedule that I've argued that high school teams ought to do for a while, and I think it's interesting that the Cajuns did it at the collegiate level in baseball. And what that is they're playing some non-conference games against conference teams to fill out a schedule. And there's something here that is even that I don't know that I've ever seen before. It happens in baseball, but you just don't see this. It happens in the major leagues, I should say. You don't see it at the college level. They're playing a four-game series against TCU. A four-game series against TCU. Then they're playing a four-game series against Coastal Carolina. Three of them are count for conference, one doesn't. Then later, about a month after playing Monroe, they're playing a midweek non-conference game against a conference team in Monroe. And so I just think we're doing that more at the high school level, like in basketball. But it's very interesting to me that they're saying, you know, it used to be you would never play a non-conference game against a conference team. But you're saying, you know, why not? If we're not located that far apart, why not? Or if a team's already in town like Coastal Carolina, why not both teams knock out one of their 56 when they're already there? And it's a good game. That's going to help your RPI. Very interesting. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Hello.
Foot, you know there's a big reason why the Bucks are not going to win the Super Bowl. Something working against them that, you know, they have no control over is the fact that they're ineligible to play in the game this year.
Right, they're ineligible. Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, it doesn't matter who you think is the better team or the reasons. If they're ineligible, I mean, they have no chance.
Good point.
Sure. See you, Foot.
Yes. Thank you. I like that call. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
Hey, Kevin.
Howdy.
I heard you talking about old Don Sutton, and he did have probably an underrated career. You know who his career is very similar to? Actually, two pitchers in almost every aspect. Longevity, career ERA, strikeouts, wins, is over Gaylord Perry and Phil Niekro.
Well, what about Seaver?
Oh, well, Seaver, I would put a little notch above those three. Seaver and Carlton, I would put a little bit above
you
them.
Think, do you really think his number, or Seaver's number, is really any better than his?
Oh, yeah. Seaver's career ERA, I think, is like 280 or something. Maybe even lower than that. Where the other ones are up around 320. And it's funny, all three of those guys had almost the same amount of wins. They all really close in strikeout, and they all got almost the same amount of wins, and they all pitched like 23, 24 years.
But those guys were, you know, different style. Like, obviously, Phil was.
I understand. One was a knuckleball pitcher. One was probably a spitball pitcher. And the other one, Sutton, was. I forgot what he was mainly known for now. Didn't he throw like some kind of cut pitch or something?
Yeah.
But
I mean, he threw hard. I mean,
honestly, if you just talk their overall career, not what they were at their best, they all probably had a better career than Bob Gibson.
No, I agree.
And I'm a lifelong Cardinal fan. But the reason they rate, most people would rate Gibson higher is they would say at his best, he was more dominant, plus he had the great postseason success in the World Series. And elevated him. Kind of like the way they do with the football. You know,
right.
if they want to, except they don't tend to do that near as much in baseball. In football, it's ridiculous with the quarterbacks. It's like they act like the quarterback's solely responsible for everything, as we know. But
And you could argue that a pitcher actually has more control of the winner of a game than a quarterback does.
Oh, there's no doubt. The game that he starts, he's definitely, especially in those days when the starter would generally go 8 or 9 innings. Unless they just got knocked out. I mean, yeah, it's not even close. But I don't think Drew's going to come back, but I hope he can heal up and decide to give it one more year.
Oh, come
on. I might be in the minority.
You fell on the minority. Come on now, let's not get senile. I know you're older than me, but you don't have to get senile just because you're older
well,
than
me. Well, why?
He has no chance.
He had a better quarterback rating than Brady had this year.
It's over.
What, because of the injuries?
Well, that too. But, I mean, I don't even think the Saints at this point would want him back.
Well, do you realize the Saints had the highest scoring average per game when he played? In the 10 games he started, they averaged 32.5 points a game, which was higher than any other team in the NFL.
I don't think most people realize that.
No, they don't realize that. They don't realize a lot of things. Most people don't realize he had a quarterback rating of 106. He had 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That's not a guy that's in decline, that's just terrible and on his last leg. It's total recency bias. If he'd have had a good game against Tampa Bay, nobody would be saying anything about him needing to retire or anything. Cook doesn't fumble that ball, I'm convinced the Saints win that game.
Well, I am as well, and you would like to think if he doesn't fumble the ball, those other two interceptions would not have happened, but of course we don't
right.
know.
Right, even
that,
Stevie P brought up the fact, like the last two games, I mean, his numbers were fine. They weren't like bad numbers, like some quarterback that was so terrible or anything.
Listen.
The biggest factor in that game against Tampa Bay was our interior line did not block well. And he got that pressure up the middle. And it's been like that for several years. If you pressure a guy like him or Brady up the middle, they don't have the ability to get out of their pocket. They're not going to do as good.
All of that is true. But understand this. His career is over. He's retiring.
Well, I'm not saying he isn't going to retire. I would say he probably is. I'm just saying if he decides
100%.
Okay.
I'm just trying to help you. He's done. It's time to move on.
Well, when he announces it, then I'll say he's done.
Okay. Okay, that's fair. But thanks for bringing up those stats because a lot of people don't know a lot of that stuff.
I got another show. I've done up a lot of other stuff. All right.
All right, thanks. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hello.
How are you doing today, Foot?
Oh, you know, I'm hanging in there.
I've got a question now. I am partisan. I'm a Dolphin fan. But I got a question for you. What do you think of Zach Thomas? He's not in the Hall of Fame yet. I mean, he was actually during his prime, but it was basically him and Ray Lewis. I think Urlacher, a part of the time, were probably considered the three best middle linebackers in the game. You think he's ever going to make it into Hall of Fame, or do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
Oh, I mean, I think he has a shot. You know, he certainly has the quote unquote numbers. I don't really think linebackers get held to the same Super Bowl team success standards that a lot of quarterbacks do. So that shouldn't be the issue. Now, you know, outside of the 70s and 80s, maybe, Miami is not, you know, in the media, even though they're in an ESPN division, they don't really get a lot of the coverage, at least when he played, that some of these other programs get. But still, I've learned with the NFL especially, it's really about how, you know, getting one or two locals and that guy building up enough and really backing him. So, I mean, I don't know where, you know, the representative from the Dolphins or the Miami area, you know, a lot of it has to do with how good a job they do at campaigning for their guy once you get to that level. But I would not be shocked if he gets in. No, and I would not give up hope.
Okay, well, I was just getting to try to get somebody's opinion on it. Yeah. During that time, he was a wrecking ball.
No,
he really was.
No question. Now, he wasn't, you know, he was more of like a Sam Mills kind of size, but he wasn't like the big Ray Lewis kind of guy. But still, he put up the numbers.
No, he wasn't, yeah.
He put up the numbers,
he wasn't
yes.
a physical
yeah.
specimen.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And again, I'm going off the top of my head. You know, Zach Thomas is an example. Like a lot of people, you probably, you know, you have your impressions. You saw him play. You were following the league when he was in his, you know, when he played and all. And yet I'd have to go and look at his numbers and to give more specific, but would not shock me. So, you know, you have to, when you're not from a really successful team or a major media market, then you have to be able to somehow overcome that first and second impression of, he's not really a Hall of Famer. And, you know, somebody's got to be responsible for doing that, or a lot of times it never happens, and that's kind of how sometimes guys can fall through the cracks. So, all right. Very good calls in that segment. Look, I get everything original Saints fan said, but he's retiring, and so, and I really, really at this point don't even think, I think the Saints are ready to move on. I think he's ready to move on. It just sometimes it happens, and you got to just move on. And I think that time, I think it was decided back in January that this was going to be his last year. That's just my opinion. 103.7 The Game. We'll be back to finish out the show next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, go to 103.7 The Game, join the clubhouse, and you could redeem 100 points towards some merchandise like 103.7 The Game t-shirts or face masks or things like that. So do that today. Go redeem your 100 points, and you could get some 103.7 The Game merchandise at 103.7thegame.com. That last promo, it reminded me of something that I've thought about recently. It's so funny to me because Andy Reid's now this legendary coach. Like, you know, he's won a Super Bowl. Who knows? He might win another one or two. Who knows how many he'll win. He's got everything going in the right direction, and everybody's praising him. It wasn't that long ago that he was this really good offensive coach for the Philadelphia Eagles that just couldn't win the big game. Just couldn't win the big game. What's wrong with Andy Reid? Can't win the big game. And just before that, the Kansas City Chiefs in the 90s were a team that would win a bunch of games and couldn't win in the playoffs. So now we have a coach who couldn't win the big game in Philly, who goes to Kansas City, which had a franchise that won a ton of games over the previous two decades, but, quote, couldn't win the big game. And now he's the greatest coach ever, and he's at a franchise that they don't lose playoff games. It's just, I'm not saying there aren't, if you break all of that down, there aren't legitimate reasons for all those blanket statements and, you know, probably, you know, just labels that you put on all these teams and players and coaches. Not saying there aren't some good reasons behind it, but the irony of those, of all of that that I just said, just really strikes me as I hear people just praising Andy Reid. And many of them, oh, he can't win the big game. Kansas City, oh. It's a team game. He didn't lose in Philly in championship games because he was a bad coach. It's a team game. He didn't, you know, it's just, and I hear people just bashing Marty Schottenheimer. You know, and every time I hear that, I think of the example where he told a guy, go down go down. And what did they do? They get the ball and they don't go down. But he's a bad coach because he told a guy to go down and an NFL player couldn't listen to what his coach said. That makes him a bad coach, can't win in the playoffs. It's all so ironic. We'll see how he goes. Thank you for the phone calls and allowing me to talk a little baseball today. It was refreshing. I'm normally still in major depression mode, but that Michael Brantley signing yesterday kind of put a little pep in my step. So I'm going to try to ride that for a little while. Y'all have a nice day.